Those are not like seriously philosophical or even whimsically philosophical. And so it's culture. Like, you know, powerful music. They love a certain song, or they see a great movie, or they... Isn't it? I mean, it's just, or they meet people, or they... The culture. So the devotees really have to become the cultural leaders of society. We have to produce great culture. It's not just about bringing... Well... I mean, generally, we present classical Indian culture like Bharatanatyam dance and everything. And, I mean, it's great, but we've run that stuff up the flagpole a million times, and the world's not saluting so vigorously. So, if you think about it, every historical period has to produce culture. There was a Bhakti Renaissance in India, and they produced all kinds of culture, literature, music, dance. And of course, it's powerful, it's universal, and we can still enjoy it today. But we have to create culture also. We have to be Krishna conscious. We have to be pure-hearted, and devotees with talent, with ability, or with inspiration, or simply who are empowered and inspired by Krishna. We have to create culture in the world, because it's by powerful culture, movies, songs, books, I mean literature, that we can actually move the people.
What is it called? Zeitgeist, the spirit of time.
Yeah, the spirit of an age. The spirit of the times. Because, for example, all of you, I mean, you're young people. I mean, here we are, all, you know, young people together here. And... anyway...
You'll never be younger, Maharaj.
What's that?
You will never be younger than you are. So you're young.
Well, that's my next body. But anyway, it was spiritually. Actually, when you're young, you like you have a young body, but when, as you get older, if you stick to Krishna consciousness, you begin to discover, literally discover, you know, like uncover. You begin to discover your eternal youth, and so that's your eternal youth. It's the real youth, rather than the physiological one. So, if the Vaishnavas, like you young people, it's, you can somehow or other just become inspired, not merely to be devotees, not merely to chant Hare Krishna, but really to, I mean, that was the real spirit. Like when Prabhupada came, and I had this tremendous opportunity, an honor to be part of that, you know, sort of, well, not the very first wave. I wasn't there at 26 Second Avenue in New York City. I was a West Coast person. I joined Berkeley. But I joined 69, so the movement was, you know, I guess it was 3 years old then. And Prabhupada was certainly there, and it was those were the days when you kind of knew everybody, you kind of knew all the devotees in the world. And like every time a temple opened, everyone knew it, and everyone probably knew the person that opened the temple. And it was, you know, it was very intimate. But Prabhupada was such a dynamic commander that he really infused in us that spirit to go out and change the world. And that's what it meant to be a devotee back then. It meant that you have to, you know, learn Krishna consciousness and all that, but life is about adventure. Life is about going out and changing the world. I guess we were lucky because we were kind of like the if I had a hammer generation. You know, if I had a hammer... Anyway, that old, you know, the whole thing with the anti-Vietnam movement and civil rights, and so it's just kind of like switching tracks. Okay, it's not just this mundane cause, it's Krishna consciousness, but that's what we need another Hare Krishna explosion. There's a book by Hayagriva called The Hare Krishna Explosion, and it's really, you young people, I mean, it's really in your hands. You have to just, and Krishna will give you intelligence. You have Vaitacharya, your fearless leader, Generalissimo, and so, I mean, we really have to just somehow or other become inspired. Like, we have to make a difference. We have to spread this movement. We have to, not in an oppressive or fanatical or overbearing way, but just with sheer spiritual happiness and enthusiasm. We have to get people to chant Hare Krishna, get them to come to our programs, and change the world. And that's the higher taste. if you really get that taste, then even though inevitably there's struggles in life, and as you go through life and try to be Krishna conscious, and different kinds of sort of like junk inside of you bubbles up at different times because we have to sort of work through all of our conditioning and all that. But still, if you'll remain strong, you'll remain fixed, you'll have your inner compass. If you really get that taste, it's that higher taste. If you really get the taste of Prabhupada's ecstatic Sankirtan movement, then you can never go back. You can never go back to an ordinary life. And no matter what troubles come your way, you'll overcome them. You'll be victorious. Like Vijayananda. Jayananda. The bliss of victory. So that's what we need, isn't it? That spirit. We've got to get that spirit to just change the world.
Maharaj, a lot of our culture is now steeped in passion and ignorance. So would you propose to embrace that passionate or ignorant culture and then infuse Krishna into it?
Well, I would rather have passionate people than ignorant people. I mean, there's a certain type of sedateness which is intolerable. It's not a question, it's how should I put it? It's dovetailing. If people are passionate, be passionate for Krishna. You've got to start somewhere. It's not like, okay, do an extreme emotional makeover and take a lot of pills, calm yourself down, then we'll talk about Hare Krishna. No. If someone's active and passionate and wants to do something in life, that's great. Do it for Krishna. How can you tell a young person or even another person, how can you tell someone that's enthusiastic, that wants to make their mark in the world, no. If you're Krishna conscious, you won't want to make a mark in the world. You won't want to do something great. Mm-hmm. How can you say that? No. My sweet Lord. Oh, cool ringtone.
So would you approve of devotees arranging like a...
Oh, don't stop it.
Yes. Like a rave concert with Hare Krishna mantra chanting?
I don't know if we have to actually roll in the mud with the people. In the sense that, they're already having their raves. I think it's just a question of trying to get them to participate in Krishna consciousness. I mean, of course, if they let you go in there and chant, I don't think we have to hold rave concerts. I don't think we have to, recreate mundane culture in its entirety. Mm-hmm. But I remember, for example, in the old days, I went to a Rolling Stones concert. When the Rolling Stones, that famous concert in Something Meadows, they played north of San Francisco. Well, no, it's back in the old days in the Rolling Stones at this famous concert in North San Francisco, hundreds of thousands of people there. I was a new devotee, so they thought it was too heavy Maya for me, so they made me wait, sell magazines out in the parking lot. Thought, he's a young devotee, Rolling Stones, it's too heavy for him, too much Maya. But we were, it's just that spirit. I mean, as far as what form it takes. I mean, I don't know if someone is like a rave musician. I think it's a question of just trying to convince people who are already there. Like if someone already is a rave organizer, already is a rave musician, or I don't even know, whatever they do there, then just try to convince them to add Krishna. Rather than trying to create a parallel material universe or something, I think we just have to convince people, be the teachers. We have to be the teachers. We have to be people inspire and show them, guide people.
I think a lot of devotees are afraid to come out with what they have to offer in fear of being kind of criticized by other devotees as presenting something that's impure or contaminated or mundane. Well, there's this hip-hop band, Tulsi Beads. I don't know, maybe you've heard of them or not, but they've received some, criticism. And I'm sure there's other, Krishna conscious...
I never heard them criticized or praised for that. I mean, the point is that there's people like India's Got Talent, and there's devotees that do things at India's Got Talent and everything. Somehow or other, we have to give people Krishna. I mean, I'm criticized, and everyone, Prabhupada was criticized. It doesn't mean we should never take good advice. I mean, some of the criticism may be good. We can't just take the position that I won't accept any criticism. What if it's good criticism? What if it's right? But still, it's not just doing raves and hip-hop. I mean, there actually is a world, how should I put it? I mean, sometimes devotees, when they want to be relevant, they just kind of pick a certain segment, like people that go to raves or people go to hip-hop concerts. There actually are other human beings in the world. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't care about those people, but they're not the only people in the world. And, but, you know, we should just reach whatever group we can, whatever group you can relate to. We should, but the real thing is the enthusiasm and getting intelligence from Krishna. I see this movement as actually becoming a mainstream movement. I see this movement as being the center of society. I don't see, I mean, of course we should reach out to people that like hip-hop, or we should reach out to everyone. But I don't see this movement just as continuing to sort of micro-target little groups, like, you know, the people that like this thing, the people like this. I think we should somehow or other be in the center of society. And we should present ourselves in a way that it's not like we're for people that like hip-hop music, or we're for Hindus, or we're for people that are into New Age yoga. We can be all that, but we should be in the center of society. We should reach out in a way that can somehow make sense to everyone. Instead of all this little, I mean, we tend to really do this micro marketing.
We need that book, what's it called? The Krishna Consciousness for Dummies?
Yeah. But I mean, everywhere there's people in all segments of society. There's people all, everywhere in society that could become devotees, or maybe there are devotees waiting to happen. And so, I mean, it's not bad to target certain groups, but we do tend to fall into these same sort of micro-marketing patterns and think that, you know, Lord Chaitanya came to save hip-hop enthusiasts or something. Yeah. And so I think we really, and that's why we should dress properly. If we're not wearing dhoti kurta, you know, if we're not wearing our Indian dress, our devotion, you know, these clothes, like Prabhupada once wrote to me, he said to me, dress nicely when you go to the colleges. In other words, we shouldn't go to the colleges just wearing a sloppy old t-shirt or, you know, a hat sideways or something like that. Because who's going to take you seriously? I mean, then it's obvious, whatever your message is, it's not very important. So Prabhupada actually said to me, dress like a gentleman, that will help the preaching. Prabhupada, he once said, I know about his disciples, I know that you don't care very much about your appearance, especially back in the 60s. So I know you don't care very much about your appearance, but for my sake, you should dress like ladies and gentlemen. That was Prabhupada's thing. Either you wear this Indian dress, you know, like saris and dhotis and all that, or he said, dress like a lady and gentleman. We should dress in a way so that anyone in society can see this is, you know, this respectable person. Anyway, that's what I see, mainstream ISKCON, movement within the movement. We have to transcend this sort of like very narrow micro-marketing and realize that Krishna's for everybody. And present, I think, ourselves in a way that just is available for everyone, so that everyone in society, whether they come from this community or that community, everyone can somehow relate to us. It's neutral, it's not just like we dress and or we market in a way that gives an overwhelming advantage to a certain segment of society and makes no sense to everybody else. But rather it's for everybody. And we have to see that. We have to regain what we used to believe. We used to believe that Lord Chaitanya came to actually change this world. That the Hare Krishna movement is actually the Yuga Dharma. That this is going, we're going to usher in a new age. We used to believe that.
Some still do.
Yeah. And so therefore, I'd say we should present ourselves, we should occupy a neutral cultural center. There are certain ways to dress, there are certain ways to behave, so that it doesn't mean you're Republican, it doesn't mean you're Democrat, doesn't mean you're a business major, doesn't mean you're a poet, it just means you're a normal, respectable person. And everyone can relate to you. And it gives everyone in society equal opportunity to approach a Vaishnava. Does that make any sense?
We have to be able to help others not to box us in.
Yeah, if we box ourselves in. If we think we're God's gift to the yoga movement or something, and we're God's gift to Hindus or God's gift to, you know, the rappers or this or that. This is a movement for everyone. The Vaishnavas are described in the Bhagavatam as Suhridang Sarvadehinang. They are kind-hearted toward everyone. They care about everyone. So we're for everybody. But not just for the 47% of the 53%. It's a joke from the last election. That's my view. I remember that. I remember when I was a grihastha, when I was a householder, and I was president of Houston, actually. In 1971 to 72, I was a temple president in Houston. My wife, she actually did all the work. I just took the credit. But anyway, so I remember that during that time, a letter came out from Prabhupada and said, you should never forget the exalted position I put you in. So when you walk out, when you go out the door into the public and you're representing Prabhupada, we have to remember that I, despite my fallen condition, I have been placed in a very exalted position. I'm representing Krishna. I'm representing the Lord of the universe. I'm representing his pure devotee. And you should dress yourself in a way that reflects that. The gravity of who you, of what you're doing. And that was Prabhupada's fear, actually, because, and that's one reason why sometimes he emphasized dhotis, not because it matters, and obviously Prabhupada wasn't a superficial mind, like, yeah, it's a big deal to wear a dhoti or something. I mean, he probably wasn't that shallow. But he saw that if he didn't somehow Indianize, you know, like wrap us up in these robes, that devotees tended to just sort of go to their default slobbery. You know, like if you're not wearing your robes, you just become a slob. Or just kind of like whatever, or just sort of, you know, like identify with and dress like, you know, certain segments of society. And Prabhupada was very big on that point. Be ladies and gentlemen. Be ladies and gentlemen. So maybe, like, I mean, many of us, before we joined the movement, we identified more with the, say, the left side of society more than the right side. You know, politically. Or we weren't just like pure establishment business majors. And so there's a tendency when you join the movement, you kind of still have your roots. You have like one foot in the spiritual world and one foot in your past. So you still think that people who are like me or people who are like I was, they're the people that deserve Krishna's mercy. And because of that identification, we tend to dress like them and kind of market to them and stuff like that. And that's what we get. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You get the point. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm saying is, we have to, if we take on that gravitas, by the way, from the Sanskrit, guru, because guru means heavy in Sanskrit, and so from the Sanskrit guru, heavy, you get like gravity, gravitas. But anyway, so that's what Prabhupada inspired that in me. When I was 22 years old, I was 22 years old. I was a, you know, little cute little Grihastha temple president. And I remember when I used to go out, I really felt that. I mean, Prabhupada really kind of inspired us. Like, I'm representing the Lord of the universe. This is so serious. I mean, let's say the English ambassador or the Brazilian ambassador to the United States. They don't go around like slobs. Why? Because they're ambassadors. We are Prabhupada's ambassadors. It's not that when we don't wear Indian clothes, we just kind of like identify with and sort of, you know, commune with mundane people from my background or something. When we go out, we are going out as the ambassadors of Krishna. And we are going out to represent Prabhupada and Krishna to the world, to the leaders of the world, to the scholars, to the everyone. I mean, we're going out to represent Krishna to the world. And we should dress in a way that, so it looks like that, that this person is an important person. This person is serious. And that's how we should present ourselves. Don't you think?
Yes.
I remember that, driving over to the University of Houston in 1971 with my wife. She's really a good devotee. It was just wrong ashram for me. But she was really a good devotee. And so we went over to the University of Houston. And I remember we were talking, I was discussing with her about what Prabhupada had said. Because we'd always get these news, like the news would come in like, Prabhupada just said this or Prabhupada just said that. It was like hot off the press. And we were really discussing how, my God, here we are at this university, we're representing Prabhupada and Krishna. This is so serious. That we're representing Prabhupada and Krishna. We are their ambassadors. I'm not here to commune with with materialistic people that come from, you know, my cultural segment. I'm here to, I'm, as an ambassador representing Prabhupada and Krishna.
It's even more important, the way we behave, perhaps, than...
It's both. Packaging is almost everything in today's society. A slob who, you know, opens doors for ladies is still a slob in the opinion of the world.
A slob looking.
If you think that modern people are not superficial, what planet are you on? So we have to, you won't get a second look. I mean, frankly, I know myself, and I'm a Hare Krishna. If I see someone looks like a slob, it's just, I think they're a slob, because you look like a slob, so you are a slob.
When Prabhupada said, first dress, then address.
Yeah.
But then we also hear, don't judge the book by the cover.
Yeah, but most people won't get that far. It's not like, I mean, if you're in a room with someone at a social event, and they're kind of stuck in the same of, you know, room with you for a couple hours, and you're sort of sloppy, but you talk and discuss, and they come to see, well, actually, smart guy, you know, he's not a brilliant dresser, but he's, you know, he's got some brains. But how many people are actually going to give you that much time and attention?
It's too fast, yeah, it's moving too fast.
We are representing Prabhupada and Krishna to society, to everyone. I remember when I became a new devotee as Brahmacharya, I was out on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley selling magazines. And naturally, I only approached people that kind of, you know, came from my background, you know, hair longer than normal. I mean, I wasn't like an ape, but I, you know, I was like sort of a student leftist.
Data connection lost.
Typical thing, you know, the blue jeans, corduroy coat, hair down to here. So... And so I, on Sankirtan, when I was a devotee, I would just approach people that looked, you know, like sort of hippies or leftist kind of people. And then some of them took books, and some of them were actually very mean. And then this boy, who was obviously like a frat boy type, who were, for me, they were like, you will never get Krishna's mercy. You know, but he was... He was some guy, just like this frat rat, you know, this frat boy, this total Greek, and he just came up to me very humbly and said, excuse me, could I have one of those magazines? I thought, oh my God, I was like total cognitive dissonance. But you know, that's like, and there's so many stories from Sankirtan, from the front lines, that give everyone a chance. One of the, here's a San Antonio story. I didn't tell you my San Antonio stories. One of the best programs I ever did was at the San Antonio Lions Club in 1973. In 1973, in December, Satsarupa was traveling with me then, and we had all these brahmacharis, like Ghanasham, who later became Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Anyway, so we were traveling with these brahmacharis, and they rented a house in San Antonio for a month to do programs. This is 73, December. It's much smaller. And so then Satsarupa had to go back to Dallas to take care of the Gurukul, which was there, so he asked me if I would take over the program in San Antonio, which I did. So I flew out to San Antonio one night. And they had a house. I forget where it was. And it's so funny. One of the people who was coming to our program, was like a devotee, was a San Antonio cop. He was like a Chicano, but he was a cop.
Yeah. George...
Is he still around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he comes. Yeah, George.
How old is he now?
He's pretty old.
Yeah.
He was a young guy then, and so he came one time. And so you have to picture the scene. We're in this house, and almost everyone at the program is a hippie with long hair, you know, and they're all drugs and everything. And so this cop in his uniform walks into the program... offers obeisances, this huge revolver falls out of his pistol, bounces on the floor, and all the other guests, the hippie guests, are just looking like, oh my God. Anyway, so the devotees, I think it was Bhakti Chair, this is Ghanasham, that his name probably gave him, he booked a program for me at the Lions Club in San Antonio. This is San Antonio, Texas. This was San Antonio, was a white city. It's 1973. It's like 40 years ago. And the Lions Club. And so what I did is I went there in my sannyasi, you know, best. And I gave this rousing patriotic speech about, you know, Krishna consciousness and American patriotism. And I actually got interrupted about six times by ovations. Aww. They were like, you know, I just kept getting these ovations and everything. And what I was saying was philosophically correct. I didn't scramble the theology. But I just tried to speak to those people about what it means being American and the great and how Krishna consciousness is increasing and assuring the greatness of this country. And again, I kept getting these rousing ovations from the San Antonio Lions Club. I remember we had one of the guests when I was president of Houston, I remember at one time I was just sitting chanting my japa in the afternoon of the temple room, because I was temple president, so many duties, I had to chant my japa after lunch. And so the temple room was just like the front room of this house on Hawthorne Street, actually, in sort of Alabama, Westheimer District. And so I was just looking out these big windows, and I saw some guy sitting just in his car. I guess he was waiting for someone, older guy, and I kept thinking, I should go out and give him a book. Nah, wrong type. I kept debating. Finally I said, So I put my bead bag down. I went out, and he bought every book I had. He was a judge. And he just wanted every book I had. So we really have to understand, this is the Yuga Dharma. This is the movement to change the world. This is the spiritual movement for this age. It's not for these little micro-marketing segments. And with that spirit, we should be proud, not of ourselves, proud of Krishna, proud of Prabhupada, because they're great, not proud of ourselves. And we should go out boldly and with confidence and tell people, you need to hear about this. This is so great. This is going to make you so happy. It's like, let's say you see a great movie, and you say, love that movie, and you want to tell your friends about it. You got to see this movie. You're not preaching. You're saying, yeah, it's a great movie. You got to see this movie. That's how we should spread Krishna consciousness. Not browbeating people, not clobbering them with, like, you know, theological demands. But we should be so excited about Krishna. We should be so excited about our own spiritual life that we just can't wait to tell people. We should bubble over. Preaching means bubbling over.
You gotta love that movie.
What's that?
You gotta love that movie, yeah.
Yeah, you gotta bubble over. You have to be effervescent. You gotta get back your carbonation. So I mean, preaching really means bubbling over. In our own spiritual life, we should be so excited about what's happening in our life, about the realizations we're getting, about how we're being transformed, how our desires are being fulfilled, how we're experiencing the spiritual world, that we just can't wait to run out and tell people about it. We should tell everybody about it. I just convinced myself. Anyway, I don't know about you, but... So I better let you go.
What do you think of the people like Gauravani?
Get me started again. What Gauravani's wonderful. I've known him since he was born. And he's a great guy. I know his parents very well. You know, they're like very, very dear friends of mine. Rukmini, actually, it was his mother. She's now married to Anutama. His father, Bharadwaja, the artist. Yeah. I know the whole family. I've known him forever. And he's wonderful. He's really...
Yeah, like I think Andhra Prabhu was like criticizing people like Gauravani for like...
Who was?
Andhra Prabhu?
Andhra is a great soul. A great soul who didn't really understand certain aspects of Western preaching.
Western preaching, oh, okay.
And modern preaching. He, no. Why, you know it's like Monty Python. Okay, generation problem. It's okay. The point is that the reason, if you look back, Narottam Das Thakur, these like super pure devotee musicians and songwriters and everything, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they wrote songs a certain way. Why? Because it fit in with their culture. They didn't declare. Narottam never said, "I'm establishing eternal patterns for all subsequent music." He never said that. He just said, this is what is super cool. This is hot in my culture. And he wrote these songs, and he was this great pure devotee and total rock star. So it's all, there's almost like a comical element where, like, yesterday's dramatic innovation is tomorrow's conservative standard. I mean, the whole point of Narottam Das Thakur was, maybe people should sing songs and know what they're singing. Like, maybe there's some benefit in actually knowing what you're singing. And so therefore, he broke with the tradition, because the tradition was that everything in Sanskrit. Sanskrit's a very sophisticated language, very complicated. You got to be, you know, most people don't know you. Most people in India didn't understand Sanskrit. So he wrote, Prabhupada said, simple Bengali language. He was just like, everyone could just put their whole heart in it because they knew what they were singing. We need English songs. We need songs in local languages. Of course, we preserve the heritage. But Narottam Das Thakur did what was popular at his time. He wasn't just saying eternal standards. He was fitting in. He was giving people Krishna. But the mode of goodness is a standard. I mean, there are certain forms of music which are not in the mode of goodness. They're like, ah. So we should find ways, you know, whatever instruments we use, find ways to do it, but in a way which is, you know, bringing people to goodness. Otherwise, at the same time you're telling them about Krishna, you're reinforcing their lower modes of nature. So we should elevate people. We have to become excited. You guys and the young people, you're the hope. I mean, there's a lot of devotees my age, and some of them will do something, but anyway, Hare Krishna. So young people, I mean, really, you know, you've been so fortunate. You understand Prabhupada, you understand Krishna. Somehow you're the chosen Prabhus. And so you have to get excited. You have to become determined to go out and change the world. You have to just go out there and do something.
And bubble
over. Yeah, so you have to do it. It's really in your hands.
Vivo.
Vivo.
Say here, Chris.
Feel the power.
Feel the Shakti. Oh, Shakti Rastute. May the force be with you. And in Sanskrit, it'd be like, Shaktin Smara, Luke. Remember the force, Luke. So it's...
Yes, remember Krishna.
Shakting Smara. Remember the force. But what would Darth Vader say in Sanskrit? Luke. Najanasi. He would say, Najanasi. Tamapaksha Shaktir Balam. Luke, you don't understand the power of the dark side of the force. Anyway. So we have... Is that before your time, Star Wars?
No.
I used it last night. I used the Star Wars example. That's a ripoff of Ramayana. A total ripoff of Ramayana.
What's that?
The Star Wars being a total Ramayana ripoff.
Well, actually, George Lucas did study classical mythology. He studied with Joseph Campbell, and definitely a lot of it is based on Vedic culture. For example, the medieval Japanese martial arts philosophy of the force, just let the force be with you. Like, don't try to do it yourself. Let the force move your body. That came from India. In fact, the word like jujitsu is just from Sanskrit jujutsu, which means a warrior. So anyway, the world is in your hands in a sense. I mean, you're the young people. In a sense, the fate of the world is in your hands. You and people like you all around the world, young devotees, you have to really decide that you're going to change the world for Krishna. Okay.
Vivo.
Vivo.
Jai, your graces.
I'm going to do it one more time, Maharaj.
What's that?
One more time. It's all Yashu Dalang Das Goswami Maharaj Ki.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I feel like you're making me relevant.
Thank you for letting us talk, Maharaj.
Pleasure. Me ashram is two ashram.
So, half of us are